Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of Out of Bounds. It's your boy Kojo. We've got a Bass back, and of course we've got the one and only Samuel in the building. And I know Richard today, so it's me taking over as the host, but obviously we send Richard our love, hope he's doing good. So yeah man, Bass, how you doing bro? How's it been?
I'm good man. How are you feeling being Producer Kojo? That's your new title.
Producer Kojo. Yeah man, I'm good man. I'm calm man, it's been a good week, so... Yeah, man, it's a bit cold.
We got three points.
Are you talking about Chelsea, yeah?
Yeah, bro, we got 3 points.
finally.
Some clubs be struggling to get 3 points.
So Chelsea's up and down, so until we hit a consistent stride, that's when I'll come back to Chelsea. But yeah, we can celebrate a bit, but yeah, come on. Samuel, how's it going, bro? It's been a long time. I've seen you on the pod.
Yeah, I know, man. It's been a minute. I know the last couple of weeks, the pods have been on different days, which haven't been able to make. But it's good to be back. You know, talk some football, talk some basketball, talk some tennis. I kind of spoiled it. But yeah, we're going to just talk about that and just chop it up. So whenever you're ready, bro, man, we're good to go.
All right, cool. So guys, three topics for today. Obviously, you're going to start off talking about yesterday's big, big game in the Premier League. Man City versus Tottenham. Obviously, we saw how that ended 3-3. Obviously, kind of start off, you know, the discussion. Obviously, Sam, you're a big City fan here. What was your thoughts on the game?
It's weird, you know, because when you see Tottenham with all their injuries and so forth, you think City's team should just demolish them. And for some reason, I don't know why it is, whenever we play Tottenham, we just don't perform well. And if you look at the last couple of games, not just Tottenham, we just haven't performed well against Chelsea, against Liverpool, and against Spurs. And from what I've been seeing, it seems like there's some complacency in the team, and like there's no energy to, like, you know, like there's normally you've got a fire in your belly. It just seems like right about now the players don't have the motivation to like kick on. And one thing with City play best when we have Rodri, when he's composed. When he's very erratic and he's doing wayward stuff, we don't perform well. And in these last three games where we haven't, you know, performed well, or we've taken the lead and we haven't killed off teams, for example, Rodri's been very erratic in terms of he hasn't played that calm, composed DM that we see him generally play. Don't get me wrong, we are missing a few key players. I think people don't really understand how pivotal John Stones is in terms of how we build up with that 3-2-5, and obviously Kevin De Bruyne, because Kevin De Bruyne is one of those guys. I see Abbas always tweeting this to save Enzo about progressive passes, isn't it? So De Bruyne's one of those guys that allows us to have those progressive passes and allows us to get the best out of Haaland. And, you know, that performance against Spurs, like, we were lucky to even get back into the game in terms of going up 2-1. And I think even when we went 3-2, if anyone said, guys, put a bet on City closing it out, I think everyone would have said, yeah, City's going to close it out. And we just saw that we just was never able to get a pattern going on or a process in terms of keeping the ball retention. And it just seemed like we're just all over the place. And again, the last 3 weeks for me, it's essentially has been, yeah, we've got points out of it, but it's more so for me, 2 points dropped. I don't know what the situation is. I think last year as well, the turning point for Man City in their season was against Tottenham at home when Pep went on that rant and said, I don't see my team. I don't know who I'm watching. Like, I don't know what they're doing. And I think that's going to be something where Pep's going to have to, you know, grab all these players by the scruff of their necks and just give them some energy and impetus to say, look, all these games are important. Because at the end of the day, it's what, 4 points behind Arsenal. It isn't big, but those gaps can kind of start to build. And you don't want to get in a position where those gaps start to build. So, all in all, the last 3 weeks hasn't been great for City fans, man.
Bass, what's your perspective on this game?
Do you know what? I'm kind of with you, Sam, with this. I think what you're seeing with City is, I'm not saying it's intentional, but there seems to be a bit of complacency with them. Like you said, if you look at the three games you've drawn, in the last three games that you've done, you've been up in all games and it's always been towards the end. Either you're not killing teams off, or somehow, someway, there's that weird belief. There's that belief now with teams that play City that we can still score against them. We've still got that one chance. If you look at Liverpool, 1-0 up, you had plenty of chances to kill them off. Chelsea and City was a bit erratic because we all said that a draw was well deserved for both teams there because both were scoring at different forms. When you look at Tottenham, for example, I know obviously Haaland comes out, he's done his tweeting and stuff, but as much as I love Haaland, I think he's the best striker right now in the world. I know some people say Mbappe, but I think Mbappe can do a little bit more than Haaland. But Haaland's added assist to his game as well. That's gone underrated. I don't think people realise that he's actually giving more assist than people are giving credit for. But he misses that open net, which he normally scores. But it seems like, okay, we might miss a chance, but we'll get another one. And it does feel like City are a little bit complacent. All that being said, we can never sit here and doubt Manchester City. But I wouldn't be... I'd still be surprised if someone else won the league. But it shouldn't be as shocking, realistically, because there's also that fatigue of constantly going, playing at that high level year in, year out. And if you look at Man City, to accumulate the points they did, to go into battles with the teams that they did, to never actually run away with the leagues in terms of the ones that they actually did win, that can get tiring on you. I said that about Arsenal at the start of the season. I go, Arsenal will suffer from league fatigue. And what I meant by that was, it's the fact that you have to play at such a high level 1 year, fail, then you got to go all again to play again. And I think we're seeing that with City, but I also think there is an element of complacency with them. But because Pep is Pep, he'll be able to get that out of players and he'll make sure that this isn't the team that I'm going to allow to be complacent with. Because obviously he's there for another season still. They've got that case handling over them. And it's interesting because they've got that date set now for next year. And I don't know if that's probably something that's playing on some of these players' mind potentially or in the higher ups where it's like, okay, our big focus is maybe this court case. But on the pitch, I think what you're seeing realistically is a team that's complacent in defence where for some reason other teams are having the belief but also going forward as well. They are missing probably chances that you'd expect them to be that clinical that they're going to bag them. That Haaland one where it was so early in the game, but you're like, if you score that, it's a blow for them. And then also, like you said, conceding so early, like Son scoring just like that. And then obviously there's a bit of luck with his own goal and then going back and forth. But I think what City need to do is go back to what I call the FIFA quit, which is if you go up 2-0, people just quit on you and you can kill them down. I think City need that killer instinct back again. But don't be surprised if by the end of December we're talking about them and they've won 5 in a row type of thing.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I think both of you guys made points which I kind of made yesterday when I took to Twitter to kind of get my thoughts on City's performance. Obviously, complacency is one of the key words that we're all kind of spewing right now. But I think defensively, City for me looked too easy. I feel like at times, playing against City, I feel like a lot of teams have a confidence that they can go against them and get a goal or two. And in all their games against the traditional big six clubs, Arsenal, Tottenham, Liverpool, Chelsea, at least 2 goals have been conceded by Man City. And I think for me, defensively right now, I think they've conceded 15 goals. I think actually 3rd best in the Premier League behind Liverpool and obviously Arsenal right now with the best defence record right now with 11 goals conceded. And I feel like for me, if City want to kind of... do their best to kind of make sure they're going for a full Premier League, you know, title in a row, to kind of create history and to make sure that they can fend off Arsenal and Liverpool. They have to make sure they're reassured defensively and they can be a bit more gelled and more organised at the back. And obviously, like you said, John Stones probably is a big, big factor into why maybe City haven't got that kind of, that rhythm, that sort of stability at the back. And obviously, you know, the injuries, you can say maybe to Rodri, at the start of the season, obviously the suspensions have maybe affected the momentum and his overall kind of rhythm this season. But for me, I just feel like at times with City, again, they come a bit too predictable. I feel like when you play against you kind of know what to expect. And I feel like maybe these bit of a change within the lineup within how they kind of go at teams to kind of have a bit more surprise factor. Because obviously now a lot of teams know how to play against City and now a lot of teams know they can get a seat defensively. And 2 reasons, again, you can say it's complacency, but I still think at times there's a bit of, you know, predictability about City. So I think that's one of the biggest kind of downfalls for City at this current moment. But again, right now, we're in December. So there's still, another 5 months after the season to go. I still have City favourites to win the league with the experience and the time they've got. And hopefully that can come to fruition. Obviously, they've got an interesting run of games coming up soon. So we've just got to see what happens.
I was just going to, sorry, just to cut you off and ask Sam this. I know we said complacency seems like the word that we put there, but do you think there's a bit of arrogance with City in this? That, like you said,
I think that's where they agree. I think that's where the complacency comes from. I feel like they know that because they have the swagger, they have the talent, they have the big star players. Because they've done this before, they know that, you know, we can outscore any team, you know, if you like. But here's the problem now. A lot of teams are going better. A lot of teams have found out City. So that's what I'm saying. Like, City are becoming too predictable now.
I think, Koji, I think that's a strong word to say, City are predictable.
I think on the defensive end, in my opinion, I think the way they set up, I think a lot of teams...
It is. It's not predictable in terms of defensively. I think what people don't realise is the way John Stones has mastered that transition from going from centre-back to midfield and back... It's very underrated, because when you're doing it, now you need to judge the space in it. Because if you go to a three at the back and someone's gone into midfield, either you stay wide or you become narrow and become a narrow back three. And I just think the complacency has just come in a sense. Well, like you said, we've got the better talent and we're always thinking, cool, we can overdo that. But also, I just think we need to realise that we've got someone down as KDB that's out for a very long time. He's going to be back in January, hopefully. But within that period of time, I don't think as much... I love Bernardo Silva and stuff like that, but we just don't make enough progressive passes, because we're always going to create opportunities. We saw with Haaland, he had two chances that normally Haaland would finish. We saw Alvarez, he hit the post. If we're just a bit more clinical, that game would have been 5-1, 5-2. But there's just these little things...
Then, again, I think... Again, if we're looking at other games such as like Liverpool and Chelsea, you know, I don't think talking about great going forward. They had a couple of chances and they took chances wherever they had them, and some occasions. Yeah. I don't think talking about spectacular going forward. But if you look at other games against Liverpool, Chelsea, and Arsenal, on their counter attack, when you're facing teams in transition, seem to look very exposed. That like they look like they can concede two or three. So for me, that's
what I'm saying. Like that.
That's the problem. I think. Complacency comes from the attacking side, because you know you guys think you could score on your team, and sometimes I felt when you guys are moving the ball in yesterday's game, it felt very controlled, but in a bad way. There was no hunger, there was no desire.
And that's my whole point in terms of the complacency, where I said they've take the lead, and because, for example, like I said, a lot of the players on the team, they're not progressive passers. So what they do is ball retention, and that's not... You shouldn't get complacent and do ball retention. It should be killing them off. Similar to like Liverpool, if you look at Liverpool's goal, we literally had a chance where Doku had beaten Matip, crossed the ball, and Alisson had made a save. And then on the counter, we got caught. And then Doku, whose man was Trent, Doku didn't track back. So it's just little blips in terms of mindset, in terms of what you need to do. And I just think if we can get back to that, then we'll be as good as we are. And why I'm saying that, like defensively, when we went on that run, we had a set back four that was playing. It was Ake, Akanji, Stones, Diaz. That's what it was. But now we're chopping it's Vardyo 1 week, Ake in, Walker at the back. We just haven't had that consistency. And even sometimes I see Alisson, you want him to be actually peppered, because when he's got time to just do nothing, the concentration of him, he makes a lot of errors. And I saw him yesterday. We've seen it before when Rodri drops deep. He does that direct ball to Rodri or the holding midfielder. And you always see there's players attacking them, pressing them. And that's where we've seen Rodri get caught before. And he was making those little errors. And again, that's all down to concentration, complacency. I just think we need to be like, cool. We need to go on a 10-game winning streak, which City can do. But we just got to be dogs and be hungry and be like, okay, we're not taking any chances. Even Haaland. I see Haaland now. He even looks like he's complacent. Like, again, we got to Mount Everest. Mount Everest was winning the Champions League. Everyone said, you're not a big team or a great team until you won it. Now we've won it. How are you getting... It's like the NBA. How am I getting up for a game on Sunday at 4:30 against Tottenham with a depleted team? It's very difficult, because you're thinking, we're going to smoke them 5-0. If Madison and all their top team played, we probably would have beat them 4-1. Or 5-1.
That's the thing.
You could say that. Obviously, City have the talent to do so. But like you said, when you opened your perspective on this game, your dialogue, you said that, you know, of recent, as we all know, Tottenham have been a bit of a bogey team.
Correct.
for City. So it's not a foregone conclusion that to say that City would, okay, no.
I'm just saying how life is, yeah. Like this team, everyone expected us to beat them 6-0, but we drew 3-3.
And actually, funny enough, I had a feeling that before the game began yesterday, you know what, Tottenham could actually maybe get a draw here because no one expects them to do anything well.
Exactly.
And Tottenham trying to play well when their back's against the wall. So obviously, yeah, maybe if Tottenham had their full level, everyone fit, maybe it would have been a routine, maybe City win.
Exactly.
But I still think for me, when I look at City, the two biggest kind of issues worries for me in recent for me is the complacency when it comes to attacking, like the attacking style of play. And also defensively, you gave the reasons why defensively things are kind of a bit shaky right now. But I think obviously if City don't get that defensive aspect right, and obviously the complacency is not eradicated from their overall performance, then I think, you know, we could see maybe a new champion come May, which I don't want to happen. Well, I don't really care. As long as it's Arsenal. But then more time or so, being realistic, if I was going to say who's going to win the Premier League, I'd say Man City, if not probably Arsenal. Because I think right now, the way how Arsenal are playing and just the momentum of the team, they look like the close challengers. Even though Liverpool have done well this season, we have to give a big shout to Liverpool. They've come a long way. They've kind of bounced back.
I think all I'm saying is you guys go rewatch the pods. Tell me what I told you about Liverpool being that sneaky good team that no one's looking at.
I never made any aspersions to say that Liverpool were going to have a bad year. So, you know, that can never be put into me.
Even look at Liverpool again defensively. They've got their defence set up, but they're still doing the same things as last season. They conceded 3 against Fulham, which have been poor.
Pass is because, obviously, Alisson wasn't in.
But again, that's what I'm saying, Sam. Like you said, Liverpool. Yeah, the defensive this season, they haven't been that great. I think right now, they're probably better than City, though. Maybe like a...
That's little issues because you take an anomaly. We conceded 3 against three against Spurs,
exactly.
That's what I'm saying. So it's those are outliers. We're not always going to concede goals like that. But
it's not like Brighton, for example, who are poor defensively, conceding
11 and 15. That can change in 2 games. We can have 2 clean sheets and Liverpool concede 2 goals in each game for the next 2 games, and they've conceded 15. So I don't. In terms of that, City have never always been great at keeping clean sheets because Edison, concentration-wise, like the goal he conceded against Son, he should not have conceded that. Like anyone should save that. Any top goalkeeper should save that Son strike. I don't know how it went underneath him. So we've never been a team where we go and bang out clean sheets. Last year, bloody United had hella clean sheets, which you wouldn't expect. And they got smoked 7-0 or whatever. So I think defensively, yes, you do want to keep clean sheets and have an iron back four. But if I can outscore and I can still win games 4-3, as long as I'm getting the 3 points, I guess that's the main thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all about, you know, being 3-point collectors and getting wins at the end of the day. Obviously, all these other accolades are all just fancy stuff. But more time or so, I think the reason I bring it up is because Arsenal... defensively have improved, and I feel like if City right now are going to stay on that pace and try to kind of rotate them, I think obviously that's the area I think needs to be worked on the most defensively. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps up our football discussion for today. Now it's just over to NBA basketball. Obviously, guys, we've got the in-season tournament knockout rounds beginning this week. Quarterfinal starting today with 2 games, Boston away to Indiana, and I believe... Who's the other one? Milwaukee against...
Is Sacramento?
No,
I think it's Sacramento and Pelicans, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. It was your Western team. Sacramento against the Pelicans, that's right. Tonight, both games obviously on TNT, Sports in the UK. So, guys, obviously, start off with Bass. What's your overall thoughts of the in-season tournament so far? And obviously, give us your predictions to tonight's games.
Can I be real with you? I think me and Sam have said this plenty of times. Good concept, but awfully executed. Like, the idea of the tournament, okay, it jazzed it up. I've seen a lot of, like, American people on, like, TikTok and stuff. Like, they said the NBA wanted to bring this, obviously, to liven up the season. The only problem, what they did was, they didn't take it away from the season. They brought it into the season. When you have the FA Cup, you have the League Cup, it takes away from the actual league. It's its own tournament, its own thing. When you start including the fact that Milwaukee play Orlando, but that game isn't to do with the group. It's to do with the actual league standings. It makes zero sense. It's like me saying, all right, I'm playing Arsenal in the Premier League, but then because we win, it goes through towards a group in the Champions League. It makes no sense. And then on top of that, the way it was formatted, the only way you could actually tell if this was an NBA playing game was if the court was different.
You did not know
what you were tuning into. You didn't. It was essentially a regular season game with a funky court.
Abbey
Road, the only thing which has got me excited by this tournament is the courts, bro. That's the only thing which is... And that's only some of the courts.
Doesn't the novelty wear off once you've seen it once? Or does it change all the time?
I think that was it. I tuned in for the first game. I can't lie. I tuned in for the first game.
You're right. Some of the courts are very like bad for the eyes, isn't it? They don't really make sense. But some of the courts, which I do rate, like, I actually watched the game and like, yeah, this court looks good, you know. It looks nice.
If you're watching the game for the court, that means the product's already bad. It's like literally saying, I'm watching the game to watch the Santiago Bernabeu because it's newly built. That just shows to me that the product that I'm actually watching isn't a value. I just want to see something a little bit new being the court. So I think, like I said, the concept's good, the execution's bad. What's going to be interesting now is because the NBA has basically cleared the entire season in terms of the slate of games, and it's like, okay, today and tomorrow it's just for the playing games. How much more people will be interested? I think now people will watch. Like, I'll watch now because I know, okay, the games I'm watching are one-off knockout games. What they realistically again should have done is in the CBA or whatever, just basically say we're doing this particular tournament, everybody is involved, and the way we're going to seed it is we can go off last year's seeding. So if you finish top of your conference, the teams finish bottom, they play them, and we just work it that particular, and then we know, cool, for 3 weeks, we're locked into a particular tournament that we want to watch and see what can happen. What they've done instead is say, you will play this team, but then your game will go into that particular group standings, and it doesn't really make as much sense for me. But like I said, I'm okay to see these knockout games because, again, like I said, you have no other interest when it comes to the NBA. The only problem, again, is they're doing it at horrible times. Why are you playing a game when it's Monday Night Football? You want people to tune in, but now you've got Jacksonville Jaguars, as much as people don't rate them, or the Cincinnati Bengals. But the Jags are an interesting story when it comes to the NFL. Are you still going to be more interested in that? You probably are. I think a lot of America will probably be more interested in the Jacksonville Jaguars playing Monday Night Football. Well,
the NFL is the biggest sport in America.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So if you're going to do it, you could have easily done Tuesday, Wednesday and worked around that. But I think, again, like I said, it'll be interesting how many people turn up. I'll be interested in these games now because they're knockout games and I know what I'm watching. But other than that, like I said, good idea, poor execution. But they'll learn from it.
Sam, take us away with your outlook.
Before I go on to this, I just saw in the group chat, I don't know who's interested, but basically, in terms of Premier League, they agreed their new TV rights. So, again,
Sky Sports.
Sky Sports and TNT. So, I think... That's good to know that, you know, we can still watch it on Sky and TNT. But in terms of the NBA, I think I echo everything that Bas said. Like, the concept's great, execution's poor. And I think... I remember when this was initially kind of brought to the table by Adam Silver, it was meant to be its own type of tournament where the NBA would break for like during the All-Star break, they would have this tournament, which would make sense. It'll be like a March Madness type situation where it's different from the season. And then you have a tournament similar to FA Cup and the winner with the trophy.
Sorry for interrupting. You know, if they had done it then,
so
many more people have watched because the NFL would have ended as well.
Exactly. And also, you want to have competitive basketball during the All-Star break because people started getting fed up of the All-Star game anyway because it wasn't competitive enough. And I think what they should have done, if they want to make it where NBA is becoming even more global and you're seeing the best of the best, if they could have got some of the teams that play in a EuroLeague to compete, because you want to see a different style. Because at the end of the day, like we've said, there's no point in you playing an in-season tournament, but you're playing exactly the same teams. It's like the Champions League just being Premier League teams, or the FA Cup is just Premier League teams. It doesn't make no sense. And I think the rationale behind it to kind of make the NBA more global and more universal, they said they should have said, okay, cool, let's invite Fenerbahce, Galatasaray, Real Madrid, Barcelona, the teams in Serbia. And it would have been a more global thing, because you want to see now how Real Madrid would compete against the Lakers. And then that kind of gives it more of a global aspect, that this is a tournament which is going to represent basketball universe as a whole and see who's the best of the best. And I think that would have enlightened people. And that also allows the NBA to take stars from the EuroLeague as well. So I just don't think the way it's executed has been great. Probably in America, it's always trial and error. Nothing stays the same. So Adam Silver will probably have a look at this season, figure out what went well, what didn't go well, and kind of change it. Because as Abbas said, if you're just tuning into a game because of the court, that means the product that's being shown isn't great. So all in all, again, concept, idea is good, but execution's poor. I think they need to just kind of figure
it out. What you said, it's just funny. You said, can you just imagine for the product, because at the end of the day, it's an NBA tournament. And you just imagine if Real Madrid from the EuroLeague, remember what happened at FIBA?
Yeah.
The US got hammered and embarrassed. Exactly. If Real Madrid came and beat the Denver Nuggets, that would look, no, it looked good, as in like, yo, this is an upset. But for the NBA itself, to have the reigning champions lose to a team in Spain, I think that would look bad for them. So
and it's all rivalry though, because now, okay, LeBron's saying, okay, cool, I need to get the Lakers to the next 2 weeks.
But that's how the US are going to the Olympics because of what's happened at the FIBA.
Exactly. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's what you want. Because you need LeBron or KD or whatever to wake up on a Tuesday at 10 o'clock and say, okay, cool, I want to step up my game. They don't care about playing, for example, just say it was a Pelicans on a Tuesday at 10:30 for what? Like you said, it doesn't make no difference, because if I win, okay, I go to the next round, but it's still adds to whether a win or loss in the column for the regular season. You need to be able to differentiate what you're playing for. And at the moment, it's probably a game that they would have taken off anyway. And really and truly, this tournament is more so for the young bucks that want to get the 500K. Like, 500K is a lot of money to everybody, but LeBron, KD, Jason Tatum, all those guys, they're not really interested in 500K. Like, that's their check for their game anyway. So I think It's a rock and a hard place. Or even if you put some G League teams in there, that would have even made it a bit better, because it mixes it up. It's not the same competition that you're playing on a back-to-back or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think they have to do something to kind of make it different stylistically.
Give me LiAngelo versus LaMelo any day of the week.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys say. But just kind of raise one point. When I said about, obviously, I look forward to seeing the courts, this doesn't kind of mean necessarily that the quality of the games are bad. It's just for me personally, obviously, that, because, like, let's be real, like you guys said, you guys criticized the way how it was executed regarding, like, it's basically like a regular season game in a way. Let's be very real. Like, they haven't really taken it away from the regular season schedule or kind of. Do you know what I mean? So for me personally, I'm not going to, as a person from London in the UK, I'm not going to stay up until 3 a.m. to watch Sacramento versus the Warriors if it's a normal season game about the court being nice and fancy.
Yeah.
Something different to my usual kind of viewership of NBA basketball. Do you know what I mean? So that's what kind of brought my attention. Okay, let me see. This looks nice. You know, the court's looking good. Let me see how it feels. Does it feel different to the normal courts? Do you know what I'm saying? But that's what I meant by that. Not necessarily the quality was bad. Yeah. Apart from the first thing of the tournament, was obviously I was excited because obviously it was a new concept. I was like, let's see what going on, let's see how it's going to go down and whatnot. Apart from that, it just felt like a regular season game to me, even with the courts. I'd be very wrong. Yeah. I felt like for some teams, it was just very, very like, all right, cool, let's just get this done. You know what I'm saying? We're here to play. Obviously, with the new CBA agreement, we can't really skip games, so let's just play and do our best. But overall, I've enjoyed it. I think some games have been quite good, like the Sacramento Warriors game the other day. I thought that was a very good game. You know, the Sacramento's come back. Any other games come to mind? I think that's the only game that comes to mind. But some games have been good in this tournament. But again, coming to the quarterfinals, knockout rounds today, obviously getting our predictions and whatnot. Who do you think is going to win the NBA Eastern Tournament? Obviously, we've got some big teams, Phoenix, Boston, Milwaukee, obviously our team, the Lakers, obviously are in there as well. Who do you think is going to be walking away at end of Saturday in Las Vegas with the NBA Cup?
Do you know what? I'll say this. I know Sam said about LeBron not caring, but I think LeBron will care to win the first one. If someone says you can be the inaugural champion, you are number one. And look, let's be real. LeBron does anything to feed LeBron's legacy more. Ego, whatever you want
to
say.
This will add to his GOAT debate. This will not
of course,
add
to his GOAT debate.
If you can be first by the time you retire in about, what, 5 or 6 categories or whatever the NBA measurement, one be metrics, etc., it's just nice to have. So for that reason, I do think that the Lakers will probably win the tournament because you'll see LeBron who'll be like, yo, wait a minute, I can win something for the first time? I'll be number one? I'm going to take that. So I think that's why I'm all right saying the Lakers. On the other side, the flip side, you look at Indiana, for example, and it's Tyrese who's saying, yo, I'm tired of being a loser. I'm tired of being a loser. And I think that gives him and the Pacers probably a bit more impetus to win because, again, they're more of a younger team, as Sam said. And that's probably the picks. I'd say the Lakers for LeBron's ego. And you can see potentially Indiana because they just want to win something. And same with Sacramento. I think that's where, like you said, Sam, I'll give you that, where you said about the younger teams and stuff like that. Probably bet on them, probably more likely to win. But otherwise, I'd say the Lakers just because LeBron wants to win something again and to be the first. He's the first at the end of the day.
Mm. You know, so crazy because do you know what I'm going to say? Just because even though they're experienced in terms of age, they're still young. I'm going to say the Boston Celtics because they've been in these situations where they've had opportunities to, you know, they've gone to the finals, they've lost to Golden State. They've been up on LeBron, you know, 4-3-3 home court and they still lose. And everyone's saying, can they get over the hump? Can they get over the hump? And I think this is going to be something where Joe Mazzulla is going to be like, do you know what? Let this be the springboard for you to, you know, win a chip. So like you can win this, you win an inaugural run, but you know what it's like to win and you take that into the playoffs and hopefully they can actually go to the promised land and win an NBA chip. And I think...
Why are you saying that?
No, I'm not saying I want them to, but I'm saying that's how Joe Mazzulla is going to pitch it to them. Like, win this in-game season tournament. Again, that's where the NBA made a mistake. They didn't even brand the tournament. The tournament's called in-game, in-season tournament.
Yeah, just call it NBA Cup.
Exactly. Like, who does that? That's what they flopped as well. But yeah, I think the Celtics will probably win because I think KD and LeBron, yeah, they would want to win. But if they lose, they don't really care because their bigger goal is to add to their legacy by winning the NBA championship. But I just think where Boston are, even though they're experienced, like they're still young. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they're still young. They're like 24, 25. That's
even
the same.
Even Porzingis, he's 25.
Exactly. So they're still a young team. So I think this is going to give them some energy and impetus to know what it's like to win a trophy, and then see, okay, cool, can we transition this to playing for, you know, the chip on the big stage? So I just think they're going to take it seriously. And I just think in terms of how the East is set up, yes, the Bucks are there. But if you look at overall, in the East, Boston are the best. And I think if they do meet like a Kings or a Pelicans, they'll beat them anyway. So
with what's right now with, so like how you said, Boston being on one side, LA being on the other, if they can get that as the final matchup,
I love it.
And for this knockout round, they've already got their dream matchup because they've got Kevin Durant versus LeBron James. So they're happy with that. Like for them, if they can get them two matchups somehow in this tournament, but they've got one already, but if they get the final, I think for them, they'll be quite happy. Because again, I'll tune in to the first game tonight. I won't watch the second game if I'm honest. Then for the Lakers, tomorrow night, I will probably watch both games. I'll try to watch both games because, like I said, it's something different that it's a one and loss. It's not
one
just
off game. Remember, it's in a neutral venue. Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's not a game.
What we usually expect as a game.
Now it feels like a tournament.
It's like an NCAA championship, one and done.
Yeah.
And I think that's how the tournament should have been done from the get-go. It would have been much more better because now it's like you can't take a night off. Where in a group stage, you can take a night off. All I need to do is win 3 games or win 2 games. You work out the parameters. But the one and done, it would have given it so much excitement. If you did the NBA season tournament over, I don't know, just over a week, that would have been sick. Because now,
I think what they could have done is, you know, like with the NBA regular season, yeah. So obviously, let's say for the, I think they should do it in this way. So NBA in-season tournament, scrap the name, NBA Cup, eight teams, four from the East, four from the West. The top four seedings, from each conference will compete for the next season in this stage, in this time of the year. Do you know what I'm saying? So
it would have been
much better. Do you know what I'm saying?
See, see, that's the only problem you get with that is if they want to make it like the FA Cup, let's use the NBA and the FA Cup, you can't remove certain teams. The best way to probably ruin this is all the teams play. But say, for example, this year, whatever your seeding is, let's say you finish bottom of your conference, you're the bottom seed. You play the first seed. You caught off what was on last year, and then we already have these bracket sets. You then schedule a specific time where you log out, whatever, certain venues, and bang, you're all playing down there.
Or another shout could have been done. They could have said, okay, over a five-year period, just do a coefficiency, because then you get a different matchups. Because obviously, people figure out 1-8, whatever, but if your coefficiency is like 55, you might face, I don't know, you could face the Pelicans or the Warriors. So at least you'll have some intriguing games at the beginning where they make sense. Because once you start figuring out, well, if I finish sixth, I can get free and you start maneuvering. Whereas now you can say a coefficiency, like how they do in the Champions League. Okay, cool. Based on your coefficiency, your pot one, pot A, B, C, D, whatever. And I think, look, there's so many parameters that you can kind of think about how the NBA could make it better. Like, what they should really have done is ask the right people, even came to the Premier League and said, okay, cool, how do you do, or the FA, these type of tournaments, or go to leagues where they have in-season tournaments or cups and figure out how they do it to execute it better. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, let's kind of wrap up this topic. I think probably the winners are going to be either the Celtics or probably the Lakers. And the reason why I say that again, I feel like if the Lakers get past KD tonight, I feel like realistically, you know, that's the toughest that's done. And the Celtics are the best team in the NBA right now. And I feel like for me, like you said, they're a young team. They're something to prove. I feel like to kind of inherit that championship DNA, you know, you want to kind of get it done within this sort of stage. And I think that'll kind of spur them on for a real belief that they can actually get things done, come towards the actual crunch time or the end of the season during the playoffs. So I do feel like it'll probably be, Not surprisingly, but the two more story teams to kind of capture the first ever NBA in-season tournament. So that should be exciting. So, yeah. Anyways, transition on to another sport, which you don't really get to talk about much on this platform. Bit of a shame. But we're going to talk about it right now, though. Obviously, me, Abbas, and Samuel, we're all big tennis fans. It's been a very interesting year on the ATP Tour. Obviously, with the conclusion a couple of weeks ago with the ATP Finals, Djokovic winning his record 7th. And obviously now we're heading towards next year. Obviously, in about 8 weeks, roughly around 6 weeks' time, the start of the Australian Open. But regarding the tennis world, obviously this week, great news has emerged, obviously, especially for me. Obviously, my GOAT, my favorite player, the reason why I became a massive tennis fan, as you guys know. If you follow me on Twitter, obviously you will see my Nadal, you know, posts and, you know, my support for Rafa.
Very biased. Very biased posts.
If you want to believe that, you can believe that. Keep it objective. But yeah, obviously, Nadal obviously announced his return to tennis. Obviously, we knew that, but he gave a timeline. He's going to be back in Brisbane, start of January, ATP 250 tournament. And obviously, today he's given an expectation that he wants to compete throughout the year. He wants to be competitive. He wants to play as much tournament as possible. Obviously, last year around June, Nadal kind of gave an indication that next year could be the last year on the ATP Tour, which I hope hopefully isn't the case. But obviously, with the injuries and his body, you know, he has to take in consideration for the rest of his life and, you know, how he feels mentally and whatnot. But guys, what was your reaction to obviously Nadal's, you know, announcing his comeback for January, and obviously your thoughts for next season regarding his expectations? Do you think he's still be that guy? Can you still see him being competitive? Can he win another Grand Slam? Can he get number 23?
Let me quickly jump on this. In terms of him, you know, announcing his comeback, I wasn't surprised. I didn't think Nadal would go out like that. And obviously, look, even though Djokovic might go, I respect all of them. Nadal, Federer, even going back to the other greats. Like, my first GOAT was Pete Sampras. That's how you know how old I am in terms of loving tennis. So I wasn't really surprised by that. I think all what's going to be the issue is in terms of him kind of devising a plan of how he's going to strategize. Me and Kojo always go on this debate in terms of the clay courts and stuff like that. I know he generally prioritizes that. But again, in terms of his knees and stuff like that, playing on clay is very grueling because the points are longer, it's slower. So that will probably have an impact in terms of how many tournaments he's going to play, because even though the clay court season is short, but it's still long in terms of tournaments that are available to play. Mm-hmm. One thing that is going to be difficult for Nadal is obviously his ranking. I believe he's at number 900 now. So in terms of...
He's 633, but they did announce that...
He's got protected.
Easier opponents in the first.
Yeah, so he's got to protect, but that's more so in Grand Slams though, where he's gonna have the protected ranking. But in terms of Masters and stuff like that, he's not gonna necessarily get the buys. And in the Masters tournaments, they're essentially Grand Slams because the top seeds have their buy in the first round, and then you play each other. So I think that's gonna be difficult because at the beginning you want to find your feet, and you don't want to play the top ranked plays so early on where you've come off a long layoff. But with Nadal, you know he's a great, and I think once he gets his stride, he's always going to be a threat. We've seen it in the women's game where Serena, she's been out for time, you know, she comes back and then she wins the Australian Open. So at the French Open, you always know Nadal's going to be a threat. Like that's his baby, that's his surface, isn't it? On the hard courts, whether it's US Open or what's it called, Australian Open, Nadal's always a threat there. So I still think he's going to make his way up. I don't know if this season will be his last season. I probably think next season will, because he's going to build up that ranking.
2025?
Yeah, I think 2025 will probably be his last season, because what he's going to do is use 2024 to get up to a palatable ranking, and then that's where we're going to see the best of Nadal. And you always want the GOATs to go out on their high horse anyway. So even if he goes out winning a Grand Slam or winning a couple Grand Slam, that would just be a great achievement for him, because you've seen how long he's been in the game for. You see his peers like Federer, he's essentially retired. He's quit. We know he's not coming back. Djokovic, obviously, he just keep on getting better and better. He's just aging like fine wine, not cheese like some people. So I think, look, it's good to have him back on the tour. And again, as we discussed, the tour's going to be on Sky Sports, so be able to watch it even easier now, where you can just go to Sky Sports and you're watching the tennis and enjoying. So, yeah, it'll be great to have him back, seeing him at all these big tournaments, and just seeing the best of him. So wish him all the best, but hopefully Djokovic comes out on top.
So
look at Kojo's face. He looks at me like, you mad, man.
Okay, I take it away.
He's going to play in Brisbane to start off with, which I think is a 250 event or 500. So
250.
He's going to play people who legitimately are playing to win something. Like, they need these points.
Yeah.
I won't need the points because, like you said, he's going to have protected rankings. What I'll say is, I think everything will be determined by the Olympics. I think if you really look at aim for Nadal, I know we talked about the Grand Slams, but I think the main thing that he's probably wanting to do is, Alcaraz said it, he wants to play doubles with Carlos Alcaraz, the old and the new Spanish duo, as they want to say. Like, obviously we had David Ferrer and Rafa Nadal back in the day. Now we got Carlos and Rafa, and I think if you can get that doubles done, I think that in itself will be something that I think Rafa will probably want to win. And probably is the most likely thing. I don't think he can win a Grand Slam. I don't know if you guys might or might not recall this time ago when we did the Zone Pod. I did a hot take, but I said when Roger Federer came back, he was not going to win a single title. Since that moment that he came back to the moment he retired, if I'm not wrong, I don't think he won a single title.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel similar here with Nadal. The only difference is Nadal has a bit more in him, where he's going to force it out, where he could be down, love 30 on his serve, and he'd be like, yo, I'm a find this switch to make sure this guy doesn't get match point. So I'm not going to go all the way there, but I don't expect the Grand Slams. I still look at, like, Australia, for example. That's Djokovic. Djokovic to a T. Then Daniil Medvedev, for me, that... I know, obviously, Yannick Sinner had a great season, Alcaraz, but Daniil Medvedev is that guy for me that I always look at. Don't sleep on this guy. Let him get past the first beat. He's the biggest threat to any single person in that entire draw that's left over. But I think when I look at Rafa right now, like I said, I think for him coming back, first and foremost, is a big thing for the sport, because we know how these guys are. It's all about marketing. As much as they win, if you can put on a slam and say, Rafa is back, like, Australia are going to be lapping this up, provided he doesn't get some kind of injury in Brisbane, because that's another thing I'd probably say. I think he might not go on to win it, but he'll probably play a couple of rounds, feel his feet, and be like, let me just pull out now, because I don't need to do as much. I'm good. Yeah. Save up for Australia. I think the French Open, fair enough as well. We all touch on him being that threat. But again, that tournament, if Alcaraz last year doesn't get injured, I think he beats Novak, he wins the tournament. I think Alcaraz probably should go in there as a favourite for that. Wimbledon, I can't look at him for that. I think all roads for me this year, particularly, is just looking at him wanting to play the Olympics and do that doubles that him and Alcaraz will do. I think it's just before, and I think because of how last year was, where you hardly saw Rafa Nadal, this year being able to see him is going to be important. I think he's alluded to it. Him and Tony, they said, we want to play a full calendar, but we're going to assess everything step by step, because I think for them, probably the main aim is Paris. Let's get the Olympics. Let's get the doubles with Alcaraz and see where we go from there.
Wait, are him and Uncle Tony cool again? Or are they still beefing?
He's still beefing. Tony was the coach Felix, and he didn't care, but he was Rafa's still family.
Him and his uncle are still cool, because even like when obviously Djokovic won the US Open, obviously like many reporters were interviewing Tony and asking about how Nadal's doing, what's Nadal's expectation. Obviously, a lot of the information that Tony reported on came from Nadal first hand, innit? So obviously, if it's that thing, obviously I'm still expecting them to be cool and on good terms, isn't it? But
do you not say that? That's been his coach for time, but now he's not in his corner.
But that makes his uncle though.
Yeah, I know, but no, so I expect that. But I'm saying, are they like, obviously they're gonna be cool because they're family wise. I'm talking about on court, because to get rid of your uncle that's been with you from day one, that's a bit of a wild decision to take, to be honest.
Oh no, but I think it was a mutual thing, you know. I feel like
me personally.
Yeah, no, but I think Sam, it was a bit of a mutual thing. I don't think Nadal was like, no, oh sorry, uncle, like it's not working out no more. I think it was a bit of a mutual thing where it came to a point, you know what, they both want to go in different directions, and it came to a point where they both agreed, you know what, I think this is gonna be the time where we're gonna call it quits. Thanks, uncle. And I think it was done very gracefully. Do you know what I'm saying? So I don't think it was done in any bitterness or malice or anything like that. I think it was kind of like a nice split.
Tennis coaching is a ruthless sport, you know. I've seen they get rid of you
No sooner's coach, that Patrick guy. Them two are still cool. And he's now managing them. Not that Patrick guy, Patrick McGee.
Yeah, but it's always been like that.
He's not managing Simona Halep, I think.
But Serena basically is retired anyway, though, so that's fine, though. Like, when obviously there was still coaching, he had other coaches, but he was always in Serena's box. Not like Serena said, nah, I don't want you moving it. And I'm just saying, based on family, where like it's Uncle Tony that told Nadal to play left handed. Nadal's not even left handed,
he's right.
It's Uncle Tony that said, oh, do it, because it's going to be different. Like, most people on the court, on the tour, all they see is right-handers. So if you play left-handed, it's going to give you an edge, isn't it? So, like, it's more than uncle-nephew relationship. These guys have been built in together. So when
Tony has been the architect for Nadal's greatness.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I think Nadal knows that. I feel like when Nadal retires, I want him to kind of give a lot of homage to his uncle.
Do you know why I think their relationship's always going to be cool? It's like I said, bro. Felix was being coached by Tony, and Tony just shaded him and said, Nadal is still my favorite. I still love Nadal, bro. It's just mad.
Of course, that's his nephew, bro. That's
what I'm trying to say. It's in terms of showing love publicly, then he's never going to be like, oh, I'm beefing my nephew. He's always going to say, like, that's
not beefing, bro. He couldn't separate. Like, you know, like, you got to separate business from family. Eh? I would believe he couldn't separate it. He could not physically do that. Felix was pissed. I seen that the Netflix thing. Felix was annoyed.
Oh, but Breakpoint?
He was annoyed.
I said set point.
He was annoyed the fact that, I'm facing Rafa, but you still want to give him some tips? You still want to side with him? What's going on, man? Come on. So I think Tony and him, I don't think they'll coach. I don't think he'll ever bring him back into that square. But, I think for Rafa, like I said, I do personally think I the Grand Slam type of thing, like being able to get most Grand Slams, I think that's gone.
He even said it.
I personally just
doesn't expect himself to eclipse Novak. I think obviously right now Novak got 24 rappers on 22. To give my turn on it.
It's all the doubles. I think personally, it's all leading up to playing in Paris with Alcaraz and being able to find a way to be able to do that. Just like how Roger wanted that final send off with him and Rafa, I think Alcaraz wants to push it. And I think for Team Spain, for Rafa himself, I think they'll try to do their best to make sure he's there for Paris.
Interesting. That's interesting advice. No, I always like your thoughts. You always come something different. My take on it, obviously, I don't personally believe Nadal will probably end up with the most Grand Slam of tennis. I feel like the injury he sustained last year in the second round, I think it was game over. I feel like to be out for a year at this stage of your career, especially how great Djokovic has been this year, which has been so annoying. So annoying. It's just, I feel like for me, Nadal has to accept himself. And he knows as well, Nadal's not really too fussed on getting accolades on being the greatest of all time. His main objective, his main desire is to enjoy tennis and be competitive. And that's the thing with Nadal. He enjoys being competitive. And I believe Nadal is still capable of winning at least one Grand Slam. I think his best chance is the French, because obviously, he's dominated the tournament. He's most comfortable on clay. And the thing is, he says about Wimbledon here, which I do agree with Abbas. Wimbledon probably, I don't expect Nadal to, I want to put him as a favourite, maybe top three. If I'm going to next year Wimbledon, I put Novak probably number one. Number two, probably Alcaraz. Number three, I probably put Sinner. Four, I put Medvedev. That may be number five. Depending on where he is coming towards July, right? But what you got to remember, if Nadal, hypothetically, right, and this is a big ask, if Nadal can get past Roland Garros unscathed, without no sort of injury, without no sort of, serious fatigue to his body and whatnot, he has a couple of good rounds. Let's say he gets through the first week, not really dropping a set, do you know what I'm saying? He gets to the quarterfinal, do you know what I'm saying? Maybe he's not taken to a five-setter, do you know what I'm saying? Maybe he gets a semi-final, right? And he has his real first arduous test. You can never say never that Nadal can get past that. It'll probably be maybe a top four opponent, but if Nadal's in a situation with the confidence he has, you can't say Nadal can't get past it. Because with Nadal, you can never put him out of any top competition. And that's for me why I will always say he's the greatest competitor that we've ever seen in this sport. The greatest competitor. Better than Djokovic for me, because I think with Djokovic, things has to go his way, in my opinion, for him to get the wins.
I've seen Djokovic in the pits and he's come back. I think they're both the same. I think mentality, they're both animals. They're both lions. They're killer instinct animals, innit? But in terms of that, I think I'll put them on par, because you've seen Djokovic down sets match point and he's come back and won. I wouldn't say with Nadal things go his way, but most of the time he's in good situations. Nadal, I've seen Djokovic in so many situations where I thought, I'm turning this off, and I come back and I see he won in five sets. Literally, you see that a lot with him. Even happened at the last US Open as well. So, I'll let you speak on it. But I think in terms of that, maybe Djokovic might edge him, but that might just be my bias.
You're right. I think they are definitely on the same level. But I just edge it Nadal for me because, for me personally, I'm going to take it back, to last year at the Australian Open. Obviously, I had no expectation for Nadal. Obviously, you've got to remember, Nadal has 7 months off. Remember, his last tournament before the Australian Open 2022 was the French Open to 2021 when he lost to Djokovic in semi-final in four. Obviously, Nadal didn't play the rest of the year. He had an injury, right? I think it was a foot injury, which was reoccurring for the last 2 years, right? And obviously, there was a lot of concern, can Nadal really be the same player? Is he going to be able to be the same Nadal old? Can he really get through the year and be a top five player? There's a lot of concerns. There's a lot of trepidation regarding Nadal's competitiveness. You know what I'm saying? Come Australian Open now, obviously, I had no expectations. Obviously, Djokovic wasn't there, but I didn't think Nadal was going to win it. I hoped, because obviously, your greatest rival, the greatest tennis player of all time, Novak Djokovic, the guy who's dominated the Australian Open, is out of the tournament, obviously, because of the COVID situation, right? So now I thought to myself, if Nadal can get something wrong, maybe, never say never. But I had no expectation of Nadal to win. Now, speed forward now to the final now. He's down, 2-0 against Medvedev, yeah? And that shit pissed me off, because I'm thinking to myself, bro, fair enough, Medvedev's a great hardcourt player. He's very good. You know what I'm saying? Look, you get to the final is a big achievement because no one really thought it would be the possibility, innit? But then when you were down two sets, oh my God, this is just annoying. Nah. He's probably going to lose in four because I expect him in the first set. And then the fact that what was so key was the second set. He was down 3-1, 40-15 on his own serve. And he came back to win that second set 6-4. And then he became only Nadal was only the third player in the open era to come back from two sets down in a Grand Slam final and win a Grand Slam final. Djokovic has never done that. Federer has never done that. At 35 years old, on the hard court, not the clay court. This is not clay. This is not the red clay. On the hard court, Nadal came back against a top two player in the world at the time of Daniil Medvedev, who had won a Grand Slam at the time as well. He won the Australian Open. Sorry, the US Open, beating over Djokovic. So, to conclude, I think Nadal has a chance to win the Grand Slam. I think it will be the French. I don't think Nadal will probably eclipse Djokovic in terms of Masters or probably even Grand Slam titles. Even maybe in the career titles. I think Djokovic has got two more career titles than Nadal. I think Djokovic obviously wants to go for the all-time record of Jimmy Connors 106.
Mm-hmm.
I think. So I think if there's any sort of accolades against Novak, I think Nadal's probably not going to get there. I just think Djokovic is too good, and I think Djokovic is a better athlete right now, so he can probably compete all year round at a better level compared to Nadal, because Nadal just can't do it. He's body-wise, he can't keep up with it, so it's unfortunate. And that's not Nadal's goal. You know, that's not his ambition. His ambition is just to play as much as he can and be competitive and, you know, see where he goes. But overall, we're looking forward to seeing Rafa back. Obviously, Brisbane kicks off January the 1st, New Year. So we'll see what happens. And But anyway, guys, that takes us to the end of the pod. Thank you guys for listening. Remember to follow us on all our socials, @outofbounds_UK. Follow the guys on their social medias as well. Obviously, Sam Underlight Media, Abbas on his socials. And obviously, follow my Twitter, obviously, is right there, my Twitter handle. Follow me. Have a good one, guys. And peace.
Take care.